January 27th, 1976.
Amazed at how many people take you literally. Oh, yeah, yeah. The other night I was talking about my vast file of trivia, and so I get a very official letter from some guy, and he says, "Dear Mr. Shepherd, have you considered donating your vast file of trivia to Yeshiva University? We have a program here." Well, people today, you know, speaking of the concrete mind. What, I don't know whether you have the same little gripe that I have, but what is it with almost everything today, including things like TV guide, television listings, and radio listings? Do you know that one of people have written me and said, "Shepherd, why are you not listed in many radio program listings? Are you curious why?" Well, I'll tell you why. It's because they won't list you unless you tell them beforehand what you're going to do. That's the truth. And one radio editor refuses to list you. He says, no, he won't list you unless you tell him what you're going to do. And I said, well, you know, that's like telling the people, you know, telling the punchline of a joke. Tonight, Shepherd will tell a funny joke that involves a whale. And you will be surprised when he... They're absolutely serious about this. And so I know one guy who gets himself listed in the paper constantly because he gives them totally erroneous things he's going to do. Tonight, Charlie Klutzman will interview St. Peter. And, of course, they in the absolute deadpan, they write it down. Now, that may sound like to you very funny, but I happen to know that most of the TV guide, most of the listings, they will not list a thing that doesn't have, let's say, that depends on surprise. So a typical TV listing will be, the Charlie Brown Comedy Hour. Yes, this riotous comedy hour is brought to you every Wednesday night at the same time. Tonight's mystery surprise guest is Elliot Gould. That kills the whole mystery surprise guest shtick right there. And why do people have to know this? Then they'll say, Carol Burnett does a hilarious skit where she pretends that she's her own mother-in-law and hides under the bed. What the hell is this? And now this really bugs me to be told. Oh yeah, the other night, for example, this guy, the TV set was on where I happened to be, and out came this announcer saying, he says, "Tonight's movie is Fail Safe. Henry Fonda plays the president. When we are suddenly a mysterious accident occurs, causing us to launch an H bomb towards Moscow, and the Russians retaliate. New York is destroyed, and so is Moscow, in the surprise ending. So stay tuned for..." Just like that. Who is this clown? And then there's one network that keeps coming on with this girl, this real vapid-looking girl, you know, she comes on, and she tells you the plots of all the shows that are coming on that night, see? And, she tells you the ends of them all, too. So her typical thing... You know, she'll say, "Yes, be sure to stay tuned tonight for Cannon, when Cannon discovers that he's been secretly being traced to his hideaway by his own mother-in-law." Yes. I mean, oh, come on, for God's sake, stop it, will you? I mean, and she kills all desire to see it. You say, oh, that sounds like a dumb plot. wants to see that. And I keep thinking of great announcements, but every time I see this, you know, I got a, no, let's face it, I got a bad head. And every time I see these things, I keep thinking of great announcements. For example, bring me a little romantic music. Tonight's program listening. You love to hear this. Tonight's program listening. We always have this oily sounding announcer. Tonight's interesting episode of The Waltons features John Boy. Tonight, John Boy confesses to Grant that he's turned gay, and the exciting adventures that follow make up tonight's issue of The Waltons. I'm sorry. How about this one? Tonight's laugh-filled Mary Tyler Moore show features a wonderfully funny incident where Mary Tyler Moore confesses that she is pregnant to Ted, the funny newsman, and the complications that follow are hilarious. Tonight, in All in the Family, Archie Bunker is mugged on the AA train. We visit him at Bellevue in tonight's riotous episode. Sorry. Oh, what a bad mind. What a bad mind. Hey, you know, I must say this, though, those plots of shows. What if I... If you ever take a TV show and you break it down into its basic plot components and then match it up with anything that you've ever heard of in real life, it's very difficult. You wonder how guys... for example, The Rookies. Have you ever noticed that show that The Rookies every week are single-handedly solve a fantastic international case? And many a cop will go through his entire professional career, and I've known some cops, and never once break a case by himself. I mean, you know, you may catch a guy once in a while stealing hubcaps or something, but there's... And they do it with absolute aplomb. At no point in the end are they paraded down the street in the back of a car, and the mayor comes and gives them a badge or anything like that. No, they just go right on to next week's adventure. This is another fantastic case. This is WOR New York. And while we're on the subject of cases, can you imagine a scene where if I came on, I said, look, I'll tell you what we'll do, Manny. There's two writers. See, these are called writers. That's not writers, it's writers. Two writers are sitting in their office just off Sunset and Vine. And these guys, you know, one guy's name is Fred Pott and the other guy's name is Alfred Boiler. And their company is called Pott Boiler. And Pott Boiler Productions. And so, you like that? So the old Pott and old Boiler are sitting there, see? And one of us says, you know, man, I'll tell you, the trouble with our shows is that we don't have enough action. And you know, we had that 47-minute car chase in the last one where these guys kept driving up and down over the San Francisco Bridge, and they kept the one guy jumped off the bridge with a parachute. You remember that one? Well, we got all kinds of complaints. There just wasn't no movement in it. There was no action. Now, we got to start doing action. After all, look what Fred did the other day. Fred had this show where Richard Boone stood between the entire city of Los Angeles and a death-dealing earthquake. And the way Boone handled the earthquake was fantastic, especially after the second commercial. Now, we got to do something. Now, I got an idea. I was sitting at home, you know, and what is it people are interested in? Well, I got to thinking about that. Sex, right. Okay, all right, sex. Now, you got to have sex in every show. Now, everybody's interested in that. I mean, if you're interested in sex, you ain't watching television. That's all right. Now, they're interested in crooks, right? Every other show has got a crook on it. Every other show you're talking about. The only time that Sesame Street comes alive, you know, really comes alive is when the Cookie Monster steals the cookies. Then that show makes sense to a lot of kids. Now, crooks, you got sex. Now, what else are people interested in? Well, I was going to tell you what they're interested in. What's the newest trend? For a long time, everybody's been from horses, right? And everything you saw was Henry Fonda riding down a street with a dusty street with Kirk Douglas, right? Well, that's all over. Nobody wants westerns no more. That's all over unless they're a kind of put on westerns, you know, like Mel Brooks stick, right? All right, Blazing Saddles, all that stuff. Well, I got an idea that the next newest wave is going to be Under the Water. Now, back in the early days of television, we had Lloyd Bridges, right? He spent all his time under the water, and that was very popular. Well, that's been 20 years now, and it's time for that to come back. A lot of people are into scuba diving, so I got an idea to combine it, too. Now, I have a guy that's a crook. I'm writing this scenario right here, and I want you to listen now, all right? A guy's a crook, right? And in his spare time, now he wants to escape. He wants to escape from a cannon. Now, in his spare time, actually, he is planning this escape. Down in his basement, he builds a midget submarine. And then, when cannon chases him down, he jumps off the wharf into his midget submarine, and then you have an underwater chase between two submarines. Now, that would be a chase. I'll tell you, we tried every other kind of chase, but on underwater chase, we had helicopter chases. We had one helicopter chase, the picture I was working on, did it in Yugoslavia. We had 422 Bremen helicopters in one scene. Now, after that, you know, what can you do, you know? So we had helicopters, we've had chases with tanks, we've had chases with jeeps, we've had chases with squad cars, we've had chases under the air, we've had chases over the subway. Now it's time for chases between submarines with nuclear weapons. And they fire off these underneath, and you got Lloyd Bridges running one cannon, running the other, and if you can get maybe, say, maybe somebody like Henry Cartino. Henry Cartino, it's great. I have him in all the shows. Henry Cartino, he's the cop up on the shore, and he's telling Cannon where the wake is going. You know, now we've got to have love interest, right? Okay, stowing away on this crook's subway, on this crook's his submarine, stowing away is somebody, you know, somebody's nice round. You got somebody. Because when you get on the subway, you know, you're like a nice full girl. You don't want any skinny girls down there. How about, you can work out something like that. Maybe Mary Tyler Moore, right? So she's pretty hot these days. Now, you think I'm kidding? That's the way they talk. But I would like to suggest to you, friends. Now, you heard that plot. You said, that's a crazy plot. You know, silly, ridiculous plot. Well, it is my contention, and it has been my contention for a long time, that if you ever actually started to put life on the screen, the first guy that would say it is not believable is Bob Williams of the Post. he loves message shows. Constantly, you got to have a message, and it's always got to be the right message, you know. If you ever have a message that's violence is kind of groovy, oh, wow. But nevertheless, I have a feeling that if you were to ever put real life on, like one night, the things that happen, which you cannot believe that you're seeing, that happen continually in life. If you did it on a TV show, no one would buy it. Guy out in Trenton the other day, driving along. Well, all of a sudden, a truck passes him. Then he's sitting in his car, driving along, and they go around a corner, and the back of the truck opens up. Out comes a piano, and lands right on the hood of his car. At which point, he had a hell of a time with his insurance company, who says, nobody can convince us that you ran into a piano. All right, now. Now, if you saw that on a chase, a piano coming out of the back of the car, well, you wouldn't buy it. Now, one night, I'm driving along in Fairmount Park, in Philadelphia. It's a very dark park, and I'm driving along in Fairmount Park, and I'm whistling down the road, and a guy goes past me at 5 o'clock in the morning, just getting light out. Guy goes past me, hell bent for election. He's going, and he's got the back of his car. He had a car that had a big trunk in the back, and the trunk is open. And he's got it tied down with a piece of string or a rope or something. And in the trunk, he had some furniture. You know, he had the top down. He goes past me, and we're going down through the park there. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I don't know why he did it, but he was driving maybe 65 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour. We go whipping around a corner there. He hits a pothole. The trunk pops open like that. And out of the trunk comes this television set. The TV sets about 20 feet in the air, and it's turning over and over, see? And it lands on the street, kapow, like that. It slides along, and he slews to a stop, and I jump out of the car, and, like, almost instantly, there was about 10 guys all standing around, like looking down silently at a corpse. We're all standing there looking in sorrow at a dead television set. It was like we were observing. You know, you have to feel that you were present at the death of some beloved person. And now, whether that guy was charged with manslaughter, I don't know. But it was just this moment. I like, one morning, I'm driving along again. I'm driving along Fairmont Park, see? And I come around the corner there, and it's just about, again, it's about quarter to six in the morning, 6:15, just getting light, see? And I see this guy on the bank. Well, when you see a guy at 6 o'clock in the morning on the bank of the river, that's the river that goes through there. There's a river that goes right through Fairmont Park. And when you see a guy at 6 o'clock in the morning, you tend to look at him. See, there's nobody else on the road. I was all by myself. And there's this guy. And what is he doing? It's fantastic. He's got a hold of a fishing pole, a short fishing pole. And he is fighting like hell. He's got a gigantic. So I see this. He's got an enormous fish on his thing. At which point, I just can't help but see. So I stop and I pull over and I get out of the car. I got time to go where I'm going. And I walk over and here's this guy. He's fighting his fish. And I said, hey, wow, this is fantastic. He's still bothering me. Still bothering me. He says, this thing's going to get away. I says, what do you got on the end there? He says, what do you look like, stupid, a fish? At that point, I get back in the car and I drive on. Now, he was fighting a fish that must have weighed 600-700 pounds. I mean, the way it was pulling him around, see, and I was going to help him. So, well, you know, after you get told off like that, you get back in your car, all right, go ahead. If you're going to get pulled on the river, go on, you know, and I drove off. So, all right, you know, you see these things happen all the time, and nobody ever, no, if you saw this stuff on a TV show, you'd love it. The reason I brought all this up, listen to this now, Los Angeles. Now, of course, naturally, it would be L.A. L.A. is where the whole world is coming together, man. All the, you know, every head, every cuckoo bird in the world is in L.A. Anyway, L.A. I don't know how to say this, but here it is. It's a United Press article. Now, you remember the plot that I had Pop and Boiler discussing? What was the plot about, right? Was it about a guy escaping in his own submarine? Did he build himself, right? Okay, listen. You say, oh, come on, who could do that? Okay. Well, I will read this in its exactitude. It wasn't only Bob Wilson's. By the way, I have to salute Howard Cosell. Either Howard Cosell was the most literate man I've ever heard on television, or the most illiterate man. I can't decide which. He creates his own words. You notice that about Cosell? Now, I don't think he does that purposely. He's always having things eventuating. Yes, and it never eventuated, Frank Gifford. Yes, well, things eventuate, I suppose, if you wait long enough. Let them simmer in the pot there for a while. Add a little bay leaves, maybe. They'll eventuate. While you're eventuating out there right now, folks, we'll give you a little time to do a little eventuating of yourself. Please, hit the button.
As the prices go up, up, up.
World famous Harvey's Seafood House on 3rd Avenue at 34th Street has reduced prices.
World famous Harvey's Seafood House on 3rd Avenue at 34th Street wants even more business, so...
We've reduced all entrees from 50 cents to a dollar. We added a choice of 6 complete dinners at $5.95 and $6.95. You save as much as $2.
That's savings. If we get enough extra business, we're smart. If not, dumb, dumb, dumb.
World famous Harvey's Seafood House near 34th Street on 3rd Avenue has free 2-hour dinner parking.
World famous Harvey's Seafood House serves only the finest quality seafood available. Cholesterol-free fish makes Harvey's Seafood House a must for diet-conscious, heart-conscious people. You.
Do yourself a favor. Come on over to world-famous Harvey's Seafood House on 3rd Avenue near 34th Street. You'll enjoy. American Express and Diners Club welcome.
So, come. Cava Corral with your old pal, Buck Board, the most complacent cowboy in West Humdrum, Wyoming.
Some folks call this a boring life, sipping Cava coffee all day, watching the grass grow and whittling little horses. But not me. This Cava is so smooth, I get goosebumps with each new cut.
There's nothing boring about the smooth taste of Cava instant coffee. Cava is rich. Even black, it's not bitter. Because Cava's the only coffee that's 90% acid neutralized.
Now, that's a big word you can say.
Drinking Cava is like lying in the grass on a hot afternoon.
Have a cup of Cava. What a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Morning, stranger. My name's Beck. I sip smooth-tasting Cava coffee and whittle little horses all day long.
Sounds boring.
Tune in again when we're all brought to you by Cava, the great smooth-tasting instant coffee with the really ugly label. Cava from Borden.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
Hello, Paul.
Listen, have I got a tip for you?
No, no stock market.
No, no. Get yourself over to the Morosco Theater to see the funniest play on Broadway.
I did.
Called Living Together.
No.
I tell you, it's really funny. It's like
Red
belly laugh kind of funny.
No, Paul, hold on. The funniest play on Broadway is Table Manners.
What?
You got the name of the theater right. It's at the Morosco,
right?
But it's called Table Manners. Clive Barnes says it's absolutely hilarious, and for once, I agree with Clive Barnes.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Cookie. How are you?
Listen, I just got to tell you about this play I saw.
You look wonderful.
Yes, Andy. Yes, I did.
What'd you see?
I saw this play, Round and Round the Garden at the Morosco. I never laughed so hard in my life.
No. Living Together. It stars Richard Benjamin and Paula Prentice.
And Ken Howard and Estelle Parsons.
Larry Nelson and Carol Shelley.
Yeah.
And they're all in Round and Round the Garden.
Table Manners. Living Together.
Round the Garden.
Living Together.
Any way you look at it, they're right here. The Norman Conquest. Three totally different, equally delightful evenings in the theater. The Norman Conquest. I bet Tracy just won.
Oh, yeah?
Work, work, work. How come women work so hard? The February issue of Woman's Day magazine offers some provocative views. Could it be that a family always needs mother, or is it just that mother always needs to be needed? And here's medical news of major interest. There may be a connection between the pill, hormones, and cancer. Read what doctors have learned about the effect female hormones can have on the growth and spread of cancer. On a lighter note, how can you have an absolutely perfect haircut? Simple. Just see what Vidal Sassoon has to say in the February Woman's Day. You won't want to miss his 10 tips on haircutting. And everything is coming up granny squares. This month's Woman's Day shows you how to make shawls, hats, pillows, and more. All from colorful crocheted granny squares. Instructions are in the issue. And remember our square-by-square contest? You'll find special prize winners to knit and crochet, too. Look for the red, white, and blue cover with the woman wearing the beautiful granny shawl. Instructions to make it are in our special granny squares feature.
Okay. You're thinking about that guy fighting that fish? Well, I often think about him myself. I mean, 3 o'clock in the morning, I sometimes look up at the ceiling and I see that guy eternally fighting a giant fish in the Schuylkill River. Now, I have no idea what kind of an obscene fish would be living in the Schuylkill River. But I want to tell you this. He weighed roughly about like a quarter-ton truck. I mean, he was really fighting that baby. You know, I had another one happen. Philadelphia is a place where a lot of this kind of stuff happens. I don't often talk about my Philadelphia days, but you have your choice in Philadelphia. Either you go crazy or you leave. And I left. I took off fast, man. I tell you, Richie Allen said it all for that time. Yeah, Richie Allen's the only guy that ever played first base in Philadelphia wearing a safety helmet in the city of brotherly love. Yeah. Oh, it was a wonderful time. So I was sitting out at the ballpark one time. The Phillies, you know, they always do this great stuff. If people in this town think the Mets are funny, and wild stuff happens at the Mets. I don't think the Mets are a funny ball club. I think the press made them funny. They don't do anything funny out there. You really see some funny stuff out at the Phillies games. For example, they always open the season with big ceremonies. Among one ceremony was this guy that came down on a great big chute in a kite. You hear about that one? Oh, yeah, he was the Batman or something, and they opened the season, the whole big thing, and he comes whipping down the thing. He got caught in a crosswind opening day, and his left wing raised up like that. He did a quick barrel roll and crashed in the $3 seats. Well, the crowd cheered like hell. See, he really went in. And only in Philly would you get cheered for crashing, you know, just about breaking your neck. And he goes crashing in there, and it was the opening of another disastrous Phillies season. That was an omen of things to come. Well, I'm sitting in the ballpark one day with this guy that I knew, and he had his kid with him. You know, there's a myth around that kids like to go to ball games, but he had his kid with him. See, so we're up in the upper deck, and there's a big crowd. Why there was a big crowd, I have no idea. There was a big crowd there. It wasn't because of the Phillies, but there was a big crowd, and it was a lot of excitement going on at the ballpark. And this we're way high up in the air. We're looking down, see, from the upper deck, and we're about roughly, just about 10 feet the other side of the first base shot right there, right by first base. So you got it, right? So we're sitting up there when all of a sudden one of the guys up in bat, he slices one. See, a foul ball. It goes, and it whistles up, and it makes a great big look. I see it's coming right at us, man. And I holler, Jack, a foul! Oh, wow! You know, we leap, and at that point, Jack leaps up in the air. The ball hits a metal stanchion right above us, behind us. It bounces down, bounces up again, and it lands. Comes right down into Jack's hands. Powie, just like that. And he's overjoyed. He says, this is the first time, 25 years of becoming a ball game, the first time I ever got a foul ball, I got a ball. You know, the whole crowd is cheering, and you know how they always wave it at the TV camera, see? And at that point, I got a ball. Then he did the dumbest thing I've ever seen happen in a ballpark anyplace. He hands it to this kid. His is with him. He says, here, Charlie, here's a ball. I got a ball. The kid takes a look at it and goes, and he throws it. Oh, my God. He threw it right. We're up in the upper deck, and the ball sailed right out and down into the lower deck, and all these clouds are sitting down on the lower deck. You know, they didn't expect the ball because they hadn't gotten the ball. They see the ball coming. Whoa! You think, oh. This guy looked at the kid. 25 years he's been under the ballpark, and he's never gotten a ball. And this little dumb cluck takes the ball. That's as close as I've ever seen to actual murder being perpetrated by, you know, what would it be called? Infanticide? And I might say that there were extenuating circumstances. No judge in his right mind could have given that guy more than 4 or 5 minutes in jail if he did strangle that little louse. You know, he just threw the ball, and then he didn't. Yeah. Well, you want to hear other goodies? Well, I mean, these are all things that you see in life that I think would make great little TV subplots. You know, Gramps kills John Boy because John Boy throws foul ball back. Well, all right, listen to this now. All right, you think I'm inventing life? Okay, wait a minute here. It wasn't only Bob Wilson's homemade submarine that floated, authorities maintain, but he was also on the lam. Many of his checks floated. Wilson's picture appeared in newspapers and television broadcasts last week along the West Coast after the Coast Guard had hauled him back to shore in his homemade submarine, which was about to sink. They pulled him back, and only after they pulled him back did they discover that Wilson's real name is James R. Ringrose, and he is wanted for $7,000 worth of fake checks. And that he was using the midget submarine for his getaway. Well, now to begin with, now would you believe a name like James R. Ringrose? And he's made a midget submarine to escape. And not only that, he's just going to try to go underwater to Catalina Island. That's roughly like trying to escape from New York by making a fast getaway to Staten Island. You know, that's not much of an escape. but now that's a great plot. I thought that's a fantastic Cannon plot. Right there, perfect plot. And, in this business now, I've wondered why they don't ever use much radio and TV as background for all kinds of hanky-panky. Oh, I've known. Did I ever tell you about this friend of mine who was putting fake commercials on the air? Oh, yeah. In fact, he drew accounts on the company, even. Oh, sure. He would, you know what he was doing? This guy was writing fake checks with the name of something like We Kill 'Em First Exterminator Company. And he invented this company, see, and then he would come on the air and do commercials for the We Kill 'Em First Exterminator Company. If you've got cockroaches and bat bugs in your house, we'll take care of them. And then he would go down to the place where he's cashing his checks and says, look, you know, these people are paying me these checks because I'm getting, this is talent fees for the checks for what I do with these guys. Of course, the cash, big chair, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. And they would listen on the radio and they'd hear it. And after about $30,000 worth of this, he took up residence in Uruguay. And I understand he's doing quite well on TV down there. Yes, indeed. He's selling revolution kits. You want me to tell the story about the Volkswagen Y? You thought that was a funny story? Well, let's see. I know 20 stories about VWs. Which one do you want to hear? Oh, the one that came down the... down the ramp at me backwards? Oh, you mean driving along and the one that came off the thing? Well, I didn't see a VW one time. I saw a Pinto come off one of those things one day. Oh, well, you know, I'll tell you, I think life is replete with more stuff than you can ever possibly... That's why I don't watch much TV. Because TV, to me, seems so... canned and so pale compared to what's going on right outside on the street. And how many car chases can you take before you begin to pall of them? I guess the public is ready for infinite numbers. I mean, I don't know. Well, like the other day, you know, this is the kind of scene that you just don't see on television. You know, you constantly see shows about wildlife, right? I mean, about every 5 minutes, there's some guy selling dog food and doing a thing about the disappearing cheetah or something on television. All shows are about an endangered species. Well, I think the most endangered species of all in our time is the sane person. That's a true endangered species because, first of all, he keeps fighting himself, too, because you keep saying, what's the matter with me? Why can't I get involved in Rhoda? Why do I think this is terrible? And everybody else was running, hey, did you see Rhoda last night? Hell no, I didn't see Rhoda last night. I might have seen Marcia, but not Rhoda. I mean, Rhoda, I've never heard of boy. But that's another story. That was the Virgin Islands, she was anything but. But that's, we're getting into some deep waters here, and I don't want to, you know, the innocent may still be around, and the guilty, too. But I one time, speaking I don't know why we can't accept reality. Like for example, speaking of seeing great things happen, there was a big thing that appeared on TV recently. It was on all the TV news about how everybody got excited up in Alabama or someplace where this rocker was rocking on the porch mysteriously. Come on. 5,000 people immediately showed up to look at the rocker, and that's exactly what the crowd was. 5,000 people standing out in front of this house, this rocker mysteriously moved. You heard about that? Listen, I've lived in at least five, if you call that haunted, I've lived in at least five haunted apartments. For example, I lived in an apartment where the floor was so cockeyed that if you put your shoe, you took your shoe off and put it on the floor, the shoe would walk across the floor all by itself. Would disappear out the hall and often go right down to the corner and have a drink. Now, if I had opened up the window and hollered, there's a haunted shoe in here! Look, the shoe moves by itself! 5 million people would come in and John Chancellor would interview me. I'm living in a house with a haunted shoe. Well, I don't know, you know. So, well, it's like the time I was down in Florida. You see great things in Florida, too, just as you do around Philadelphia. I was in Florida one time, and I see this guy riding on a 10-speed bike. And, you know, 10-speed bikes are all very, you know, the big deal, see. So he's riding along, and he's got all the 10-speed bike equipment on. He's got the, you know, that bicycling jersey on, and he's wearing one of these funny little hats. And he's got the dedicated look that they all have. I somehow relate 10-speed bicycle riding with the T-shirts, with granola, with voting for Eugene McCarthy, with all these things seem to go in a package. And he's riding along, and he's looking very, very, very official. See, he's riding along like this, and I see him going around the corner there, and it's right by the Inland Waterway. You know the Inland Waterway, right? So he's going along, and the Inland Waterway is off to his left. There's a little grass there, and there's a little concrete abutment, which is only about an inch high, really, just a little concrete thing. And the waterway, he's riding along the road, see? And he's going along, and all of a sudden he hits what looks like an acorn, some little thing in the road. See, he's going real, and he goes, I can see his wheel starts to wobble like this. He cuts across the grass. He's frantically riding along on the concrete abutment, and the next thing I know, in he goes. Well, that was a great moment. I just kind of liked it. And he's, you know, you'd say, oh, that poor man, isn't that terrible? No, the water was only about 4 feet deep there, so he stood up and looked kind of silly, and I rushed over there, me and a couple of other guys, you know, who don't eat granola. We pulled him out of, we pulled him out, and as we pulled him out, this guy said, why don't you ride something safe, like, why don't you get a Pontiac or something?